Welcome to Doctors of the Baobab, a podcast where we delve into the rich tapestry of experiences, challenges, and triumphs that shape the diverse journey of doctors of African descent in Africa and the diaspora. I'm your host, Dr. Nondumiso Makunga-Stevenson, a medical doctor, life coach, and founder of Ubuntu Doctor Coaching, dedicated to helping doctors find fulfillment in both their personal and professional lives. On this podcast, we go beyond the white coat to get to know the doctors we admire and respect. Join us as we explore the stories behind the stethoscope, uncovering the humanity behind the medical expertise. Whether it's navigating the complexities of patient care, overcoming personal obstacles, or advocating for change in healthcare systems, each episode promises to inspire, educate, and uplift. So sit back, relax, and prepare to embark on a journey of self-discovery with Doctors of the Baobab. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to today's exclusive interview with a true pioneer in the field of cardiology, a beacon of inspiration both in Africa and beyond. It is my pleasure to introduce Prof. Ngoba Tshabetse, a clinician scientist whose groundbreaking work at Charlotte Maxeke Johannesburg Academic Hospital has not only positioned him as a leader, but also as a thought leader, a role model, and an international expert. Prof. Tshabetse's journey is nothing short of remarkable. A graduate of the esteemed University of the Witwatersrand, he has distinguished himself as a clinician with a relentless dedication to understanding and combating cardiovascular diseases, particularly among the Black population of South Africa. His pursuit of excellence has led him to specialize in internal medicine, earning him a fellowship with the College of Physicians of South Africa and currently pursuing a PhD at his alma mater. At the heart of Prof. Tshabetse's work lies a passion for unraveling the mysteries of cardiology in his local community. His research, fueled by prestigious grants and awards, offers hope for better treatment and prevention strategies in cardiology. But Prof. Tshabetse's impact extends far beyond the consulting room. As a dedicated educator, he's committed to nurturing the next generation of medical professionals, imparting his knowledge and expertise to both undergraduate and postgraduate students. His leadership roles in professional associations underscore his commitment to advancing cardiovascular care in South Africa and beyond. What sets Prof. Tshabetse apart is not just his academic achievements, but his unwavering dedication to serving his community. Once named Intern of the Year during his internship at Chris Hani Baragwanath Hospital, Prof. Tshabetse's early recognition foreshadows his future success. Despite lucrative opportunities in the private sector, he's chosen to devote himself to the public sector, where his work directly impacts the lives of those most in need. His decision is a testament to his values and serves as an inspiration to others in the field. In 2017, he was named one of the Mail and Guardian's top 200 young South Africans, a recognition which further solidifies his status as a rising star in his field. Beyond his professional endeavors, Prof. Tshabetse finds joy in travel, in jogging, and most importantly, spending time with his family. His holistic approach to life reflects a deep-rooted commitment to balance and well-being. So, listeners of Doctors of the Baobab, join me today as we delve into the mind of a true visionary, a leader whose work transcends borders and whose passion drives him to make a difference, one heartbeat at a time. Welcome, Prof. Ngoba Tshabetse, to Doctors of the Baobab.
Thank you for having me. It's a pleasure and an honor to grace this podcast, and looking forward to share my journey.
Excellent, excellent. And we're so excited to have you. And maybe for the audience out there, I do have a disclaimer. I have at a point interacted very closely with Prof. Tshabetse in some of my previous professional roles. And maybe that's a good place to start, Prof, because please forgive me for this. I hope you don't take it the wrong way. But on my phone, I have you as Professor Black Excellence. And that is from the time that I worked with you. And of course, you know, when we talk about Black excellence, in my mind, the reason I put that was really based on my experience of you, you know, where you really exuded this sense of high level of achievement, success, ability, and so forth and so forth. But I know, of course, people do have a challenge with the term Black excellence because it implies and feeds into the idea of respectability politics. But we won't go into that. I'm just sharing my reasons why I put that down and what informed that. Would you say that's a true characterization of you? Is that how you would look at yourself? What does it mean for you, Black excellence?
Yeah, I think for me, it's all about showing up, putting your best foot forward all the time. And in terms of where opportunities weren't available or accessible to people of my genre in the past, now being made accessible and available, I realize that I am an ambassador. So it's not just about me, but the impression that I leave sets the tone for the next individual, generation, key opinion leader, academic of my genre, in terms of this is the standard and the bar that we've seen and we know it's capable, and hopefully, again, opening doors, changing perceptions or stigma that may have tarnished or have been portrayed. To say this is what we expect, but when you show up and set a very high standard and give 100%, those who may have not had that perception or thought about you, it immediately changes what they're thinking. And so that's, for me, is important, especially when you realize and you go to some meetings and venues where you find yourself you're the only one of color or only one. Also, with my challenge, not just like the color, but also it was my age, when sometimes I found, will everyone respect and receive me well? And so it was important that I always demonstrate that I can deliver, I can do the work, and I can do it well.
Yeah. And that's exactly why you are listed as Professor Black Excellence in my phone. You know, your dedication and commitment to doing your very best. That was the sense one got working with you. And I appreciate the sentiments that you're sharing, because a lot of us as Black professionals feel that weight of having to be excellent in everything that you do, even in leadership positions, that you have to excel. But I wonder if anything in your childhood might have informed that. Were you always that child? So if we go back now to your upbringing, well, how was Prof. Black Excellence as a child? Was he also somebody who was really doing his best and showing up and showing out?
Yeah, so I think as a child growing up, I come from a family of 9 boys, and I've got a twin brother. So we're the last ones. Growing up, I think having a twin, naturally, there's always this competitiveness, desire to do well. In fact, my father used to intentionally set us up for competitiveness. For example, he wouldn't buy 2 bicycles or 2, in those days it was TV games, it was not PlayStations and all of that. And he'd say, whoever does well in school will be the custodian. Of course we share, but you are the custodian. So should we be in a quarrel and I decide I'm not playing anymore, then I take my bike or I take my TV game, and that's that. So naturally, one knew that you have to do well to excel. But the real turning point for me was actually, I remember very clearly, it was in grade 3, standard 2, somewhere there. And I was a very average student then, I think. And what the school used to do was that at the end of the year, the top five achievers in each class had the privilege of going to select books, academic books that they would be awarded to them. So one book each during the end of year academic ceremony. And for the first time, it bothered me that why are these five getting books and I'm not getting a book? And then I remember we got these water gun toys, like pistols, and I was very much unimpressed. And I vowed to myself that, no, next year, I'm getting a book. And it became a personal drive. And in fact, by the time I was in grade five, I remember my school teacher, Mr. Kalis, he was even saying, yeah, and of course, I'm with my twin brother in class, that, yeah, one of the Tibetan boys going to be the Minister of Health. You know, so already I think that just put one on a trajectory. And I think at that time going forward, I never had my parents, they didn't need to push or motivate. I considered myself, I'm in the running for top achiever in the class. And that was that. In fact, I remember in the primary school I went in, they used to publish the grade 7 results in the local newspaper, and we had done well. And in fact, even in my matric year, in our class, I got the top marks for that year for the matric achievement. So really, from that light bulb moment in grade 3, standard 2, there was just this desire that I want to do well. I also want to be recognized. I want to receive books rather than get toy guns. And naturally, with that commitment and hard work, became a self-driving engine that just continued to propel me from primary school to high school and even coming to university. That just became the standard that this is what we do. We work hard, we excel, we get good grades. And if I wouldn't get good grades, there's a sense of, what am I not doing right? Where have I not applied myself fully? What can I improve? Etc. So it's always about self-reflection. And I always had an internal locus of control where I say, the ball is in my court. This is what I've achieved now. How do I improve? So yeah, that's really, I don't know if that gives you more insights, but those are the driving forces that allowed me, since at a very young age, just to really be someone who is dedicated, committed, and hardworking.
So now you get into medical school, which is full of people like yourself, top achievers, which can be a little bit challenging sometimes for the ego. How was your experience of medical school with other competitive people who are also top achievers?
It was very inspiring, actually, because I realized, you know, sometimes when you are in an environment where you feel you are at the top of your game and there's no one better than you, you can become, I don't know, maybe lose that momentum and drive. What happened for me was, as you rightfully say, you find yourself in this environment. There are other exceptional students who are doing very well, and it pushes you even more, because now it's I look at it almost like, if you consider any sport or training, in order for you to be the best, you have to play against the best. And only when you excel against the best, then you can consider yourself, you know, really something special. Otherwise, if you're just excelling and the competition is not up to par, then you can't say that. So for me it was very inspiring, and I realized hard work, consistency, and those were my mottos. I never thought, and even now I don't think of myself as someone who's like clever or brilliant. I consider myself a hard worker. And I always believe at the end of the day, hard work and consistency is what's going to show in the end. I remember in my medical school days, for example, generally Fridays, most of the students, it's, you know, let your head down time, go to the movies, things like that. For me, that was consolidation time. You know, what did we learn in the week? Review my summaries, what's happening next week. So I use that time strategically for that. And for a long time, for years, I did that. I would only reward myself to go to the movies in our local mall here called Rosebank after our end of block assessments or exams. then I would, that weekend or that day was a timeout day. We've done an exam, we're done, or a test, I can go and relax. But I always looked for these opportunities where I could work and use my time wisely. So I was very much aware that we're doing a lot of work. It's a lot of subjects. It's a very competitive speciality. Everyone here is here by their gifts, their hard work. And so I never took it lightly. And I always felt, privileged, that here I am, and let me maximize that. So yeah, so it was actually very inspiring. And it motivated me to do more. And I think you need that in life as well, when you have others around you whom you can see their progress and not feel, they're doing so well, but rather they're inspiring you as well to say, hey, if so-and-so can achieve this, I can also achieve it. Let me work harder. What do I need to do? Yeah.
Yeah. And for young doctors, and that is an area that is very close to my heart more recently, how to inspire them with the changing landscape, the health landscape, I think, it's a bit challenging for young doctors at the moment to see a future in medicine and stay in medicine the way you and I have for many, many years. How would you inspire somebody now who's just starting off with the internship, maybe even at Chris Hani Baragwanath Hospital, about the, of course, there will be challenges. That's not to say the medical profession anywhere in the world is not all rosy, but how would you inspire them in terms of saying to them, if this is your calling, this is where you should be. What would you say?
Yeah, so I think it starts there, because I think what's happening now, many individuals see medicine as it's job security, it's potentially lucrative, and often they look at us from the outside and they don't know the other side, the long hours, the studying, the fact that when you graduate, you'll be starting as an intern, and that whole journey, and it's a very long journey. So and if you look at your other counterparts, engineers, lawyers, accountants, by that time they would have graduated, they'll be working, they'll be earning a reasonable salary, really doing well for themselves. So it really starts there to say, why am I actually doing this? Am I really passionate? Do I love people? Do I love helping people? Am I determined to be a solution to the health problems that exist? So once that mindset is set and you are committed to that, definitely the journey is fulfilling. There's nothing more rewarding than saving a life, someone that you knew or had a very poor prognosis, or you resuscitated and you brought them back and you've given them a chance. And then and these patients recognizing that as well. And they see you as the individual. You are that angel that actually delivered them from that sickness or suffering or disease. So it's definitely fulfilling. And I think if that's where your core is at, you are on the right track, and continue and pursue it. There's a lot of opportunities. There are a lot of unmet needs that still need to be resolved from, whichever speciality, if one decides to subspecialize, or even just from a general public health perspective. And we need more doctors as well to be willing to raise up their hands, to get involved and to take up space in decision making, in policy making. So even if you may be a generalist and you are there for the right reason and you're passionate, your insights, your contribution is desperately needed. So that's what I would say to them. Don't be deterred by the struggles. It is an uphill. And as you go through the journey, I think it's also introducing you, especially in our setting in South Africa, of the challenges that exist. And there are questions that you'll put to yourself, but why are things this way? Why don't we change this? Why don't we do things in a better way? And my answer to you is that, yes, things can be better, but you are the answer we're waiting for. So, continue and pursue that journey.
Oh, wow. Thank you for that. And the reminder about the privilege that it is to be a doctor and the reward that comes with it. As you've said, sometimes it's just a thank you, doctor, you saved my life, that really centers you again and can refocus you on your personal mission. I really appreciate that very, very profound reminder. So you now have given us some ideas also about the early, at that time, Dr. Tshabetse, is an intern, just doing what he does, which is to do his very best. You complete your community service. And then what happens next?
Yeah, so in fact, I went through a rough time during community service because I'd worked in Barra for 2 years back to back. And I actually felt like I've burnt out. I felt, wow, I've given everything. Can I really manage this? Because one thing that's different from the academia. In academia, you learn for an exam. You learn hard. You put in the hours. The exam comes. The exam ends. Then you breathe. In clinical practice, that doesn't happen. You constantly, you know, there's a constant demand. There's another patient. There's another person who needs help. And when you are that person, you end up giving everything. And then eventually, I think at that stage, came ComServe. I was like, whew, can I really do this forever? So it already confirmed one thing already. When I started internship, I came to a conclusion, I need to specialize. So that was that, because I said to myself, I can't be always on the ground after hours every fourth day or fifth day. I'd rather be a consultant. I come, I do post-intake ward rounds, I review complex cases. So I knew I had to specialize. But also at that time, now with my clinical overwhelming, that's when an idea came to mind to say, should I do public health? And I remember telling my then chief of unit, Prof. Roy Shires, that, you know, I'm thinking of pursuing public health. And to his dismay, he was like, no, I really don't think that you need to do that. I'm going to speak to the head of department, Professor Ken Huddle. I'm going to tell him that I've got this medical officer who's very promising. And you just give me your CV and I'll even write a motivation letter for you. So I really didn't have to do much. I did apply for the registrarship post in public health at WITS. However, the interviews came, so I was shortlisted. I was invited to the registrar interviews for internal medicine. Lo and behold, I got the job offer, and I stalled with sending in my acceptance letter, hoping public health would respond. And eventually, I remember it was a Friday, the secretary at the department called, Dr. Tshabetse, we're waiting for your confirmation. Are you accepting the registrar offer? So I'm like, yes, I accept the offer. And then about a week later, two public health calls, we're inviting you for interviews. And I told them, you know what? I've already committed. I've accepted an offer here. So yeah, you can basically come here. And that was my journey, you know. And I guess now looking back, I'm glad I stayed in clinical medicine. Because at the time, I realized now that, you know, it was probably burnout I was going through. And even where I am now, I'm still convinced I'm walking in that calling specifically of what I'm meant to be doing. So I don't have regrets with pursuing subspecializing in internal medicine and eventually in cardiology. But yeah, at that time, I did have that moment of, you know, will I do this forever? Should I not do public health and get a normal 8-hour job from 8 to 4 and no one calls me at night, et cetera, et cetera. But yeah, so those thoughts did come to mind.
Prof. Ngoba Tshabetse, a key opinion leader, international expert and cardiologist, international thought leader, and Professor Black Excellence. Thank you so much for your time and joining me today.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Nondumisa, for having me. And I guess just a closing comment to say, sometimes it's what others see us doing. So in our work, in the manner we carry ourselves, there are many, many more that we inspire that we're not even aware of. But we are communicating and, you know, giving them that encouragement to continue to go on. So thank you for having me. And I hope your listeners will enjoy this podcast and they find some inspiration that they too can become professor of Black excellence.
I'm sure. Thank you so much for that.
Thank you.
And that wraps up another insightful episode of Doctors of the Baobab. I hope you found today's discussion both enlightening and empowering. Before we part ways, I want to extend a heartfelt invitation to the audience. If you are a doctor and you've been inspired by what you've heard today and you're ready to take action towards positive change in your life, consider working with me, your host, Dr. Nondumiso Makunga-Stevenson, as your personal life coach. You can email me to learn more about my coaching services and how we can embark on a transformative journey together. Don't forget to subscribe to the podcast so you never miss an episode filled with valuable insights and strategies for personal growth. Sharing is caring, so if you know someone who could benefit from our discussions, be sure to spread the word and encourage them to tune in. And let's stay connected beyond the podcast. Follow us on all social media platforms, including LinkedIn, Facebook, and Instagram. Join the conversation, share your thoughts, and connect with like-minded individuals who are also on a journey towards living their best lives. Thank you for tuning in today. Remember, every small step you take towards your goals is a victory worth celebrating. Until next time, keep striving, keep growing, and keep shining bright. Doctors of the Baobab, where medicine meets motivation.